Eskom wants you to suffer just a little, especially if you have a battery or inverter system. They're saying that customers need to delay starting up the inverter and battery systems when the electricity returns after load shedding. And this is to avoid a demand peak after every planned back out. These peaks can destabilize the system. It can lead to trips, which means that there's a likelihood, if that happens, you're longer without electricity. Essentially, Eskom says load shed yourselves if you have a battery inverter system. Don't all switch it on at the same time, and this is so that we avoid the system being tripped. But I remember the people of Cape Town coming together during our water crisis, day zero. We managed to significantly reduce our water consumption. But now we're faced with a worse crisis, the electricity crisis. And the question is, can we do the same, have the same approach to reduce our electricity demand? This theme for this week's Wednesday panel, we talk about how do we reduce? How do we have the community aspect when it comes to load shedding? We're going to be speaking to Professor Tennis Boyson, Professor of Electrical and Electronic Engineering at Stellenbosch. Also, Dr. Tony Obilana, Senior Lecturer in Food Science at CPUT. What do you do if your fridge is off for several hours, and how do you preserve some of your food? And also, Sarah Collins, she's the founder, the inventor of the Wonder Bag. It's something that has been around for a while, but a lot been talking about. How do you cook your food early on in the day, and then you keep it warm in a Wonder Bag later on? But I'd love your tips. 021-446-0567. How do you survive load shedding? Tennis Boyson, thanks so much for joining us. Tony Obilana, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us. Tennis, I'll start with you on that warning by Eskom. They want us to essentially, if you have a battery or inverter system, load shed yourselves just a little bit. Don't bring it all at once. I understand the issues of that peak as the electricity comes on. And that is one of the tips on how we protect a grid, is to look at these measures of not all coming on at once when the power returns. Correct, Tennis?
Yes, yeah, that's more or less right, Hester. I think it's important to know that this effect has already been happening to a large extent with geysers, because all of us will withdraw water from the geyser during load shedding, and then when the power comes back on, all of our geysers turn on simultaneously. So the effect is something that we already have on the grid, and there's not much we can do about it. In terms of the inverters, I don't think anybody would actually go to the effort of delaying their inverters recharging the batteries. I don't think that's going to happen. But the one thing that we absolutely have control over is to set the charge rate of our inverters. Many inverters are charged at a rate that's approximately the maximum charge rate of the battery. But just flicking a very simple switch can reduce that. We can charge the batteries at about 0.15 of our battery capacity and still be able to charge it in time for the next load shedding. And that actually makes a substantial impact on how much the grid is affected by inverters charging batteries. I hope I understand your question correctly.
Yeah.
Your frown means that I may not have.
No, I'm trying to formulate. I forget that you can see me in this panel, but this is how I formulate questions. A lot of us have connected our inverters or battery systems to the DB board so that there's unlimited or uninterrupted power supply. And that is what we've largely done to make our lives easier. We don't want to be rolling out cables, and, you know, even for 5 minutes without internet is a pain for some people. Is that necessarily advisable in this current crisis? Many of these systems have not necessarily been designed for the South African phenomenon of load shedding. So is it actually advisable to connect your roller trolley inverter to your DB board so that you have unlimited power?
Allow me to answer you in three parts. Sorry, I'll try to make it real quick. The first thing is, it's not allowed in developed countries to even charge your batteries from the grid. Okay, so in Germany, you're not allowed to do it. You have to do your own generation to charge your batteries. That is to protect the grid, because they know that when you charge from the grid, you're obviously going to abuse it. So that's the first thing to take into consideration. The second thing is, We've done simulations of what happens when we have 15% penetration. In other words, 15% of households install the system. And we ask the question, how much of load shedding is curtailed, or how much of load shedding is avoided or kicked back basically by doing this? So to what extent do we remove Eskom's power to apply load shedding to protect the grid, right? And if only 15% of households install these inverters and batteries, then we take away 70% of load shedding's impact for households. So it's really a concern that needs to be taken care of and to be looked after. The last aspect that I want to mention real quick is, I don't see how else we're going to cope. Mm. We have businesses, we have households, and these things need to continue just to keep the economy and our livelihoods afloat. So I think we need to strike a fine balance. Mm. And that's why I say we need to probably have some legislation to control the charge rate to reduce the impact of this. And this is where I'll stop.
Because we actually make, and I'll move on to Tony and Sarah in a short while, but we actually make no difference with our inverters and battery systems if they're not connected to solar panels. If we are still sucking from the national grid to charge your inverter trolley or inverter battery, it's actually making zero difference in that case.
It's leading to a grid collapse effectively, because we're taking away Eskom's ability to manage the grid through load shedding. That's basically what it's doing. Now, I don't want to sound alarmist, but that's what it comes down to.
Tony Obilana is a lecturer in food science at Cape Peninsula University of Technology. Tony, thanks so much for joining us. We're sitting with a threat of stage 8 this winter. It's 4 hours on, 4 hours off, perpetually, if we hit stage 8. My chicken, my mince in my freezer is going to melt. This is a concern for people who live month to month with groceries that they stock up in the freezer. From a food scientist's point of view, what are some of the things that you are seeing that people can do to protect themselves around this phenomena of prolonged load shedding? Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Lester. Thanks for having me back. This is a big concern with regards to trying to preserve what it is you have in your fridge. Unfortunately, the only thing you can do to avoid a lot of that happening is to shop for what you need to cook for the day. A lot of us have moved on to trying to get foods as fresh as possible. So we buy a little bit to last a couple of days in our fridge. But as we're losing power due to the load shedding, we need to buy what we need to cook for the day, so that we don't lose that freshness and we don't have a phenomenon of microbial spoilage or even pathogens growing during the time there's low shedding, during the time we're unable to keep the temperatures low enough to stop them from propagating.
But we're busy, Tony. I can only do a once a month shop, because I would get some sort of smart shopper discount or whatever card I swipe at the supermarket. Also, I have a family to see to. My time is stretched. I need to do a school run and bath and feed the kids. We need to find some sort of troubleshooting hack to see through life at the moment, particularly when it comes to preparing food.
Yes, no, you're right with regards to that. With regards to preparing foods, we need to plan, you know, the day ahead of time with regards to what we're going to cook and start the prep, and possibly try to cook beforehand if possible, so that all we need is just to warm the food at the end of the day when we're ready to consume it. And this, obviously, warming is not possible if you don't have power, so you have to resort to possibly a gas stove. And getting a gas stove is not something everybody can afford. So it's a wood-fired stove and a solar-powered cooker. All of these are expensive, but these are the things we can actually resort to be able to prep our foods if we do come home during the time there's load shedding. What the immediate impact of this, and you would have seen, is in areas where there's load shedding, you would have noticed people are reverting back to eating takeaways, which is what we tried to stay
away
from.
The takeaway brands are absolutely scoring, and we spoke about this in business yesterday. They've seen an increase in revenue over the last while.
Yeah, if you drive around during load shedding in the regions where there's load shedding, it's absolutely bonkers at the takeaway joint. Your KFC, your Nando's was dying out. Nando's now has a long line of queues because all the other areas have queues waiting for them. So we're resorting to going back to takeaways as much as we're trying to be healthy. You know, one of those unintended consequences of load shedding is that now we're getting unhealthy, and some of us who rely on being healthy, you know, through discovery, for instance, are losing out because we're going back to eating these fatty foods that impact on the matrices they actually do measure.
But what a great seg into Sarah Collins, the founder of the Wonder Bag, the inventor of the one, not the inventor, because the technology or the idea has been around for the while. You have the Wonder Bag concept, and this we've been talking about a whole lot more is planning ahead, you know, cooking your meal and then putting it into your product called the Wonder Band. Many people are adjusting their lifestyles to accommodate this phenomenon of load shedding. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning, Lester. Thank you very much, and greetings to my fellow panelists. So first of all, Wonder Bag is not about cooking your food and then keeping it warm. What we are doing is we only need 10 minutes of electricity to bring your food to the boil. Then you put it in the bag, you seal it, and it continues to cook for 8 to 12 hours. So unlike an inverter, we are not needing more energy from the grid. So it's really important to understand that it's not a warmer, it's a cooker. And so what is happening is that we are now getting domestic demand side control of your own home. So we may not have control of the supply demand, but we certainly have of the supply electricity, but we certainly have control in our own homes with a Wonder Bag. Talking to Tony's point, the Wonder Bag is one of the best freezers. So if you've got frozen food, you take it out of the freezer, you put it into the Wonder Bag, you seal it, and it will keep it frozen for 8 hours. There's another big issue that's happening in South Africa that we're only seeing the start of, and that is cholera. And that is due to water that is not boiled. It is a hygiene issue. Now, many, many homes in South Africa are bringing their pots after they've had their dinner, bringing their pots to the boil, putting it in the Wonder Bag and leaving it overnight. So in the morning, every child going to school, everybody going to school has a warm wash and clean water. The dignity of our country is at stake, and that is what I want to drive home. What load shedding is doing is it's driving inequality. So people can afford big solar systems, inverters, but all that's doing is pushing the inequality and the people that need solutions and need everyday solutions further into dire straits. So my call to action is we need Wonder Bags in every homes in this country because that will bring back morale. It will bring back hope. It will also create an environment where we have some sort of control over our food, over our drinking water, over our hygiene. And I think, you know, as was alluded before, when we had the water crisis, when we changed our light bulbs, what is South Africa galvanizing behind to change the moral and the depression that has set in?
And some
I
of
think.
those, and some of those habits are lingering. Today, I still am in the habit, warm water rinse and wet, turn off tap, lather, and then rinse off that soap. That is a a message that was drilled in a day zero phenomena, and some of us still maintain there's still people who still say they bath out of choice to bath out of a bucket with warm water. And these choices that we make now does have an impact on our level of sustainability even after a load shedding has passed, Sarah.
Lester, can I share a fact with you? That if we have 5 million homes with 2 Wonder Bags in it, we will reduce load shedding by 2 stages. Now, I'm not prepared to get into an argument with Professor on this, but this, the data stacks up. I'm a carbon credit registered, so everything that we do is verified and audited. And I'm not saying that we can change Wonderbag and stop us going to stage 8. But in effect, what we can do is we can reduce our personal loads, the household loads on the electricity grid. And I know many people may think it's just a bag. We are hearing from our consumers that it is a service delivery necessity. Yeah. Why can't they get Wonderbags? And that's something that I want to put out there and say, as a Wonderbag entrepreneur, a load shedding entrepreneur that started this business in the first load shedding in 2008, my call to action is let's get behind this. Let's get business. And the amount of money that it's going to cost to get those bags into homes is not even a half day of what it's costing the load shedding.
Tiense, I want to go to you. You're an electrical engineer. You're not a sociologist. You don't talk, and your expertise is not necessarily how we change human behavior. But there are plenty of messages here in this respect that says, and I quote, Eskom can go fly a kite. They created the problem and then criticize our solution. Fix the core problem and the recharge spike will be less. That's a message from Neil. You're not a sociologist. You don't necessarily deal with human behavior, but you know literally the nuts and bolts that if we don't change behavior, it could lead to even worse problems.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Lester, I'm not a sociologist, but even engineers are people. And we have to treat them as such, right? I think very importantly, I'm not trying to sell anything. So I'm just going to get out there and say a few things that's important to hear, maybe. The first thing is the one thing that we desperately need to look at, or three things that we desperately need to look at, I think, is clean cooking. So what Sarah's talking about, the Wonder Bag, the one alternative that we also need to consider is just electric pressure cookers. You can reduce your cooking footprint by 17% to 90% by just using electric pressure cookers. They are extremely handy in these circumstances, and you can use a very small inverter to drive an electric pressure cooker. And also it's obviously safer, and many people are reverting to burning wood or to gasoline, and a pressure cooker is much safer in that way as well. But the other thing that I think is important to note is that our economy is bleeding because of the impact of load shedding. So if you calculate the cost per kilowatt hour of load shedding, it comes down to about 6 rand per kilowatt hour of load shedding. Now, if you take that to two very important things, first thing is water heating. Basically, our economy is subsidizing each bath by approximately 30 rand. That's a very important thing to take into consideration. Wow. The second thing is, if you look at our poorly insulated households, if you have just one room with a heater burning in a poorly insulated room, that is our economy subsidizing you by about 12 rand per hour. So I think insulating our rooms better, using less hot water, those are two very big things, and then clean cooking, as I said. Mm.
Tony, I'll have you have the last word. And as a food scientist, and this is a question, may sound very flippant to some, but to others it's important. Someone asking about the phenomena of 2 minute noodles or cup of soup, that when we boil water, or we're boiling it on the pot and be putting it on boiling water, people are asking how long you actually need to boil or cook certain foods for it to be absolutely fine. And there's some argument that says that 2 minute noodles, 5 minute noodles, it's all kind of arbitrary. Once it reaches a particular point, it is cooked. Cooking pasta till al dente, you don't need 12 minutes. 7 minutes will do from a food scientist point of view, not from a gourmet chef who is going to, you know, talk about what is tradition. But in terms of a human safety point of view, just how much is enough?
Okay, to start off with, whatever food you buy should actually be as much as possible devoid of any pathogens, that's microbes that could otherwise harm you. It, from about 60 degrees onwards, most of these pathogens or microbes, which are mostly proteins, are inactivated. So once you get to about 60 degrees and going up, that's why you see, for instance, your medium rare steak is about 63 degrees centigrade, and they say then you pull it off the fire and you let it rest before eating it. So about 60 degrees. But get into that. As soon as your water is boiled, you can actually take it off the fire. And I would say it depends on your taste as far as 2 minute noodles is concerned. If you like it al dente, you pour the water out and you cool it down. Or if you like it nice and mushy, you let it sit in the hot water for as long as you want till you get it to be as mushy as you like it. And then you can eat it then. This is, of course, assuming that the food is not contaminated to start off with. And that is generally the case with regards to a lot of the dried food. So your 2 minute noodles, I mean, if the water is hot, you take it off the pot, off the fire, and you let it sit. It will, 2 minutes in the microwave will get your, and let it sit for another 2 minutes, and your 2 minute noodles is good to go.
Well, yes. Tony, Sarah, Tennis, as always, really appreciate your time. We can have more and more of these conversations, and I think we should. Sarah, really appreciate your time. Tony and Tennis, what are your tips at home? 021-446-0567. Keep a flask next to the kettle, Lester, full with water that is boiled, and you don't have to boil it so often, is one suggestion. 021-446-0567.